Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by banging these bongos.
Crazy.
Hey, hello. Welcome to episode number 110 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. As I record this, it's Bank Holiday Monday. Minus one. Yesterday, we was in the garden with a family having barbecue, wearing t-shirt and shorts. Unlike a Brit to be moaning about the weather. Firstly, as ever, Patreon supporters, thank you, both new and old. We couldn't produce this podcast without you, and it really is very much appreciated. And if you'd like to support the podcast for as little as £3 a month, just go to the Ministry of Arts bio and you can follow the link there. We're just a week away of the loosening of the lockdown rules. Lovely to have a little glimmer of something on the horizon, right? And thank you for all the love we had for last week's episode, Chelsea Lee Winterbottom. That was one that seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people. But anyway, getting back to this week's episode. Some time ago, I was lucky enough to sit down and have a good old chinwag with award-winning writer, comedian and actor, Katie Wicks. As far as her acting roles go, she played Daisy in Not Going Out, Carol in Staffelet's Flats, Mary in Ghosts, and good old Sarah Ferguson in The Windsors. And if you're a fan of Taskmaster at all, you'll know that in Series 9, she stomped home winning every creative task. And in 2018, Katie plucked up the courage to enter her first artwork into the Royal Academy's summer exhibition. And her work was hung. I also saw one of Katie's portraits at Fiumano Class Christmas Before Last. It was an exhibition of artwork from comedians. It was called Art is the Best Medicine, curated by Annie McGrath. But pretty much all of what I've just mentioned you're going to hear in this podcast anyway. So please, come and join me over Zoom as I went to meet Katie Wicks.
The goal is if I can actually open the laptop and begin, I'm usually fine. But yeah. So I started doing this thing where I think, right, I'll put like the telly on, the radio on really quietly. And I almost concentrate better when there's noise sometimes because yeah. I think it's like I'm tricking myself that I'm not really working. It's like I'm half looking rather than just like I am doing it.
Yeah.
Like sometimes the distraction is it puts space between me and the thing and it makes me feel less anxious about it. Like, oh, I'm just having a little play. I'm not really. Whereas sometimes when it's like, no, this is work time. Oh, it's just the pressure of it feels the silence is like, yeah. Deafening.
Well, funnily enough, that's how I got into podcasts, was that I can't listen to music because I end up singing along.
But, oh, right.
So I had to have like Radio 4 on or something that was talk radio or audio books something yeah, that's in the background. Then I got introduced to podcasts, and then I saw that there was little or few art podcasts about where they're actually interviewing people, because I like to sort of know people's backstories.
I'm so great. I've been so grateful for podcasts during the pandemic. I do like. I was saying this to someone the other day. Like, I hardly listen to music anymore because the first thing I'll do is put on a podcast, like in the morning, last thing at night. Like, I have one on a sleep timer, and I listen to it at night. So any.
Well, my one's this one's gone a bit sort of mad today. Really, it's my 100th episode is out today.
Oh, I feel so. And
because I'd done a poll about 6 weeks ago to who I should try and get on. You know, anyone that comes up on top, I'll try and get them. It's only a few phone calls away, hopefully. You know.
Yeah.
And I come out on top, and a few of us said like, try and do it so that I interview me. And
right.
I thought that'd be pretty easy. And man, it was like, 2 hours worth of recordings took like 30 hours to edit. And my God, I've been sort of inundated today. You know, it's been
that's amazing.
Been quite
there's something thing. About like monologuing, isn't there, that like allows you to speak. For some reason, it makes me think of, you know, when you're about to sort of start a tangent, you think, is this worth it? But I'm going to do it anyway. Like, I can't remember what podcast it was, but I heard this thing about after the tsunami, there was this thing where they put up like grief phone booths where you could go in, pick up a phone. There's no one there, but you could just talk. Like if you needed to talk to someone, but you didn't, but it was too much to talk to a person. There were these phone boxes where you could basically just talk to the dead kind of thing was the idea down the phone. Yeah. It's such a beautiful idea. It's sort of almost like a semi-art installation, but also kind of therapeutic. But yeah, just made me think of that.
I have 7 questions that I ask each artist.
Love it. Great.
The first would be, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
God, that's a big one. Well, I guess there's primarily, you know, like what I'm known for, but then there's the stuff that I do, which probably isn't known. Which is probably, some of it I definitely couldn't call art, put it that way.
Stuff I don't know.
So like, I mean, for me, it's like, it all comes from the same place, which is basically like, as long as I have some form of self-expression and I have a creative outlet, then I'm sort of, it's like, if I'm not making something, I get really down. And that's when like, life doesn't get great for me. So it's almost like it keeps me sane that I have to be making and creating. So yeah, like acting and writing, I do mainly comedy, but the writing, like this book I've just written, it's kind of like memoir, but kind of autofiction. Like I've just made stories out of things that have happened to me. And that was sort of more like an attempt at kind of prose poetry almost. It's not really going for comedy. So that's been quite an intense creative process. But in terms of kind of like fine art, I suppose, I've started painting again. I started in painting in lockdown. I used to paint more and then I just left it for ages and ages. I'm not sure why, but recently I've taken it up again. So yeah, I do kind of bits and bobs really. Like a bit of, well, what I really wanted to do in the pandemic was to sculpt, but I don't have enough room in my flat. So that's the only reason I painted. Like I'm a really average painter and I really wanted to sculpt. That's like the thing I really want to do.
Painting's quite sculptural though.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I really want, like, I just love, I really wanted to make something 3D.
Yeah.
And, that's the weird thing. Like I bought all these canvases and I spent ages painting them and I enjoyed painting the canvases more than I did the actual like figurative stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm doing the wrong thing here. Cause all I wanted to do was just paint the canvases in block colors.
Yeah.
And that I just could have done that all day. And then I thought what I want to be is a painter decorator.
Get yourself a roller.
And I thought, well, I can't just sell people like canvases with anyway. So I'm going to try some more abstract stuff because I think that's really what I was interested in. Because I kept painting the canvases just different colors and spent ages mixing the colors. And I spent ages getting the background right. And then I was a bit like, oh, what's going to go on it? Oh, God, it's going to have to look like something. But yeah, I've really discovered like, in fact, I did a couple of courses as well. So this isn't even answering the question. But I'll shut up. So I think that's what I do.
Well, that's a bit of a tease. What courses did you do?
So I did History of Aesthetics, which was brilliant. I loved it. It was like 8 evenings, and that was it was a St. Martin's one, but actually they've teamed up with University of Arts London, I think. I can't remember what it comes under. But anyway, that was really, really great because I didn't go to art school or anything. I don't really have much theory. I loved it. It was really fascinating. Sort of started with Aristotle, went all the way up to present day. And it's obviously just touching the surface over 8 evenings. But I really, God, it was so fascinating. I'm so glad I did that. And then I just did like a couple of weekend painting courses, like acrylics. Again, because I don't have much like technique. My dad painted and my grandfather painted, not professionally, but you know, they were just hobbyists. But yeah. So that's why I kind of started. But I wish I had more like technical knowledge. I don't at all.
And was it watching them that made you want to do it? Were they figurative?
No, not really. They were, it was a mixture of like, so my dad, when I was really little, he used to, do you remember in the back of magazines, like you used to be able to send off for things? I remember like in the back of the Radio Times, there were like these sort of Chinese hand-painted plates and you'd get like one a week.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, my mum used to get those plates. I think she thought they were really like classy. And my dad, and I don't know what the magazine was, but he used to send off for like these posters of the old masters. And you'd get made like 5 posters would come each week. And when I was quite young, I was really obsessed with them. They were so dramatic and eerie, the Caravaggios and things like that. And they told a story. And I was quite obsessed with those old religious paintings as well when I was young, just because it was like it was theatrical, I think. It was like a stage. Because they trained as actors, my parents, but they hadn't, they gave up when they had kids. So they kind of had a lot of unfulfilled creative yearnings, I guess. My dad used to paint in the shed and it used to stink of oil paint, you know, turpentine, all those like amazing heady smells. But I think I wasn't really interested in painting. I was interested in making stuff. I really like sculptural stuff. I didn't really paint till I was like doing GCSE art, to be honest. I think it's like that thing of like, you don't want to do what your parents are doing necessarily. Yeah. But my grandfather, weirdly, and I was thinking about this the other day, he used to paint copies. And I don't know whether that's a thing people used to do. It feels like...
Yeah, all artists have done it to try and get the feel of the brush marks and the movements.
Is that why? But it was weird because he never did any... I can't remember him doing a single original painting. It was like... I think it was just he was a hobbyist and he had a little tiny studio. And it was quite scary, so you weren't really allowed in. But when I did go in, I just remember there'd be like his easel and then whatever it was on some kind of twee print. And he'd just copy them. And I remember finding it like just really weird. That he never did. I understand like if you're going to do it as practice, but to only just do copies is...
Well, there's artists who work, who only copy.
And then, but they're not in a fraudulent way, just this is a copy.
I've done an interview with a guy last week who was an ex-forger.
Oh my God, I listened to that. That's fascinating.
He's quoted as painting more L.S. Lowry's than L.S. Lowry.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Kate, while I was talking to him, just here on his wall, I could see like the bottom of a painting. And I said, oh, what's that one behind you? And he's tilted his computer a little bit. And it was a Leonardo da Vinci's portrait of Christ that went a little while ago for 450 million. Shit. And then I saw one just off screen there over on the side. He turned it round. He had 2 Picassos there. He turned it 180 degrees. There was a couple of Ellis Lowry's, a big Damien Hirst spin painting. There was fucking loads in there. But he now does them as genuine copies. He doesn't.
Right. He does them like honestly.
He still puts their signature in the bottom right-hand corner. He does it on a brand new canvas so it can be noticed as 21st century. And he puts his signature and mark on the back, you know.
That's quite a skill, isn't it, to be able to copy like that? That's
He says now that he can do an LS Lowry. He's done so many of them that he can just do them.
If you're going to copy anyone, Lowry's quite, that's quite handy, isn't it? Quite simplified shapes.
copying is a legitimate thing. A lot of people do, they want, if they own a renowned painting, they don't want to hang it in their home. They want to put it away in storage for safekeeping.
Yeah.
But have a copy of it in their home.
The status.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Own. Go to look at art online, and I've seen that on your Instagram, you've got a hell of a lot of art. You've got more art on your Instagram than a lot of artists I know.
Yeah, that's the thing. When I joined it, I was like, oh, I don't really know why I'm joining this. I'm not taking many selfies, not really. It kind of makes me cringe taking selfies. Anyway, and then the more time I spent on it, I was like, oh my God, this is an amazing place. Because it's just all visual. And I started discovering, actually, not so much artists I discovered a lot of illustrators. There's so many, particularly female illustrators on there. So I was following all these illustrators, and then I was following all these accounts that just had really interesting, weird images that I was obsessed with. And then a couple of also really good artists. But yeah, it's amazing for that. It's like it's like a real catalogue of. And that's kind of why I'm on it now. I'm on it for my friends and seeing artists that I love who I wouldn't have known about.
I did go to a show that had you in it. The art is the best medicine.
Oh, Annie McGrath. That was that little Oprah, wasn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw, Annie sent me some images of the artwork, and then I went down to interview her for this.
Yeah, great.
And I got down there, and they was just hanging it at the time. I think it was the day before the show. Yeah. And I walked in and I saw yours. I think yours was yours on the wall in front as you walked in.
It was at the back, sort of. Yeah. It was at the back. Yeah.
I saw it and it made me smile because I figured it was so huge. Big. Yeah. And then I walked in and I saw it and I thought, well, there you go. That's the trouble of looking at everything on your phone.
And it was that's it. No sense of scale. I think I left it quite late, and I thought this will take less time. But actually, that all the detail ended up taking longer. Yeah, I enjoyed doing that. Yeah, I was looking at, you get those Indian miniatures.
Yeah, yeah.
I was looking at those, and I love miniatures anyway. There was an exhibition maybe a few years ago, I never made it. You know that thing when you make a note of something and then you go, oh shit, that exhibition of miniature portraits, and it closed like
finished, 3 weeks.
Yeah, ago. I'm always doing that. But I don't know much. I know that like Elizabethan portraits, it's like if you were going on an expedition and you want to take your loved one with you as a keepsake. I know that's sometimes where they made those little portraits. But again, that's a course I'd love to do, is to learn how to do those like Indian amazing point, but they're always in profile and they're always really colorful, and that's what I was thinking of with like a tiny, I mean, I've got another one up there, but anyway, well, this is a podcast, there's no point in me showing you.
Well, a friend of mine, Rob Mundy, he's trying to bring miniatures back.
Who isn't?
He's one of the world's leading holographers. He makes holograms. Have you seen the hologram of the Queen? It was her first hologram.
Oh, yes, yes, I have.
Fucking stunning. It literally stopped me in my tracks. When I walked into
his
apartment, he got it out for me, and I walked in and he'd put it on the floor. It's like she's in a little box, because you can move and you can see all around him. It's amazing. But he's trying to make little holograms to try and bring the miniatures back again.
It kind of reminds me, like, the first time I saw 3D printed people.
Yeah.
It reminds, there's something really delicious about miniatures. I don't know what it is. Like, I've heard different theories about it, that it's like a feeling of control, because it's sort of like being, like, you know, in charge of your own little universe. I'd forgotten how much I loved like miniatures until like me and if I, Ellie White, you should get her on this. She's a comedian. She's a really, really talented painter. We went to a Doll's House exhibition together about 3 years ago, and we sort of knew it was going to be twee and sort of bit middle England, but we sort of wanted to go anyway because it would be kind of a bit ironically, but it's sort of be, it's just a kind of weird world you want to enter. Because and it was incredible, it was fascinating. It was just like all these trestle tables with all these people that handcrafted miniature everything. And then it was all, for some reason, they always seemed to be kind of Victorian. And then there was this one woman who made just stuff like contemporary stuff, but tiny. And I thought, yeah, that's actually really kind of brilliant that you're making like a tiny iPhone. Like that's,
you know, that after a while, their mind just thinks in miniature, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that's how they think after a while. Have you seen Roy's People or Slinkachoo? They do they get the little railway figures.
Let me write that down. No, that sounds great.
One's Roy's People, the other is Slinkachoo. I don't know how, I think it's just how it sounds. But they get the little railway people that are probably sort of like a centimetre and a half, and they put them in different environments. So that in the pavement, and or they're abseiling down a curb or something.
I've definitely seen that on Instagram. I didn't know what that was called, but yeah, it kind of reminds me of like, do you remember the guy that was painting chewing gum on the floor a few years ago?
Oh, yeah, there's a few of those. Yeah.
It's quite a few of them now, isn't there? Yeah. Like I planned to go to Amsterdam over Christmas. Obviously it didn't happen. It was a plan made, you know, before all this. And the street that we had our Airbnb on, it's famous for having all these small houses in a crack in the wall.
Oh, yeah, I've seen
know
them.
About? Have you? Because I was like, oh, my God.
I've not seen them myself. I've seen them online.
But yeah, I was a bit like, oh, this is fake.
Them as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and stuff like that is sometimes I think it's a sense of, there's something really secretive about that, isn't there? That it's like, if you're an observant person, you'll be rewarded with this little, like, present if you sort of pay attention. I like that idea. That's nice. So anyway, yeah, miniatures. It's also the practicality, like I said, of, you know, I've got quite a average size flat for that. It's not big, so it's
what you
practical.
Need to do then, isn't it? You know, you're saying that you want to work with sculpture, work with miniature sculpture. Have you seen the guy who carves into like the nib of a pencil?
Pencils, yeah, I've seen that pencil guy.
Hell.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was obsessed with, do you remember Fimo, that clay? I was always obsessed with that as a kid. So it's sort of exactly the same as making things out of Fimo. Yeah, but anyway, I don't know how we started talking about scale, but yeah.
Royal Academy, you got an artwork in there, didn't you?
I know, it was nuts. It was so cool. Well, do you know what? It was like, so my dad died just before it happened.
Oh,
and, great. You know, he would have been so proud. He would have been so proud. And mum was in the process of dying just as it happened. So they died very close together. So it was really moving for that reason, because he would have, you know, he would have just been in, he would have welled up, I think, with.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I entered two, and one wasn't, looking back, wasn't as good. But I think that I sort of feel like if it hadn't have been that year, and if it hadn't have been Grayson, and if it hadn't have been the theme, because I think they said they wanted kind of humorous stuff. And, you know, without sort of doing myself down, I kind of feel like, because it was kind of humorous and it was pink and it was a bit camp image.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have got in, because I remember going back the next year and it was quite monochromatic and serious. It almost like it had gone the other way.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, yeah, I wouldn't have stood a chance in this grown up one.
It is handy to know what they're looking for before they
definitely
they do it, isn't it?
I'm glad I checked. I'm glad I looked, because I sort of, when I read the kind of the sort of blurb on the website, I sort of thought, no, I reckon this is my kind of, this is my time. It was overwhelming, and at the time, I think because I was dealing with dad and stuff, I actually don't think I had the brain space to kind of take it in.
Yeah.
I went around and just sort of looked at it and was just like, holy fuck, my God, this vid in this fucking room. And it had a really good spot and it was quite big. So it wasn't like, you know, that was mad that it would take up that much wall space.
Yeah.
And then it was only a few months ago, I've got like the booklet here and I picked it up and I sort of went, oh my God, like that's actually amazing. Because at the time, I think I was just dealing with dad and stuff. So it was a little bit like, I couldn't really, but yeah, I'm really, really proud. That was a mad moment.
It was your first go, wasn't it?
Yeah, first go. I know, right? I know.
I've gone five times.
I've got mates that have been doing it forever. I know. No, I feel bad. It feels like a fluke.
I got once.
Oh, yeah,
And I had to sort of, I went through to the next stage.
Yeah.
And then it didn't get in, but just sort of half. I nearly got in there this year by proxy. In unbeknownst to me, an artist done a portrait of me last year.
Really?
And he put that in, and it got through, but it didn't get hung because they get about 10% too many artworks.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that they could shuffle them around, and even if you get through to the hanging, you don't necessarily get hung.
And God, that makes me feel even more special.
And mine, thanks for rubbing it in. And,
my head's even bigger now.
And mine didn't quite get there. But that was by an artist called, do you know Wilfred Wood?
Yes, I do.
Done it. Wilfred Wood, of me.
Love his stuff. Amazing.
And he does a lot with clay and plastic.
Yeah, plasticine and stuff. Did you know the artist? Do you know what? I'm so bad at names. It's like being trapped in
your mind. I'm the same. Explain their work. I might know their work.
Her name is, I heard it, Shona. She's an American artist. She makes massive paper mache sculptures of women, usually quite big women. Shona
Provocative. They might be in provocative
dances.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like sometimes... They've got like, like in the bath or they're like in bed or something. Yeah. I think they're incredible. What made me think of, just like the idea of paper mache was amazing. She posted a video of her, like her sort of making it. And it's actually a really lengthy process with like loads of layers and loads of sanding down. So yeah, it's harder than it looks.
When you see artists using the likes of paper mache and plasticine, mm-hmm. And it's what we think as childhood materials that makes it feel like the artwork is more accessible to the maker, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also it takes away for me weirdly. It also takes away some of the kind of shame of like if I want to do something, but it feels kind of childish.
Yeah.
It sort of makes me feel like there's no shame in. Connecting to that inner child, like, oh, I just want to do this. I just want to like splurge paint around today. Or, you know, I want to make something that's kind of innocent and sweet. Like it kind of makes me feel like, yeah, exactly. Like it's the skill, not the material. Like
well, because that's why I got into conceptual art.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Because I was going down the route that I wanted to learn how to paint and sculpt and draw in the traditional sense. And then I come by Sensations.
Oh, yeah.
Which happened at the time. And do you know Mona Hatoum?
No, no, no.
She had a colander with nuts and bolts in all the holes. And when I saw it, I was like, what the fuck's this? This is a trip to B&Q in a £10 note, you know?
Yeah.
And then I don't know. Do you know anything about my backstory?
A little bit.
Right. So did you know I was in jail?
I only knew that, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I knew that's the big bit.
Enough. Right. So
the main
yeah,
bit.
Right. So I was in jail for quite a long time, right? I got into art in there, and then Sensations happened. They brought the catalogue in. Mona had to, and this was a postcard that was used as a bookmark in there. And I was like, what the fuck is this? This is a trip to B&Q, you know? And the tutor said, well, rather than just slag it off, take the catalogue back to your cell and have a read. And I'm reading it, and the same thing again. There was cows cutting off, and I joked that there was a bloke on D-Wing in for simile, you know. there was Tracy Emin's tent. To me, it was a tent, you know, and a bit of embroidery.
Yeah.
And then come to this colander, and they'd already said it was probably like upwards of £5,000-£7,000. And then I read, there was a little statement about the artwork, and it said that where she was Lebanese, she'd come to the UK because of the change of government at home. She couldn't go back. She was an educated woman. She wasn't pretty much welcome, you know.
Yeah.
And all of the holes that were filled with these nuts and bolts were the closed entrances and exits for her getting home and the people getting out. And then all of a sudden, I've gone like, fucking hell, how has she said all of that with this fucking colander from under the sink and a bag of nuts and bolts from the shed, you know? And then that sort of unlocked that conceptual key. And then I'm looking at the rest of this artwork from a different angle, you know? I started looking at it, and then bang, overnight, I wanted to be a conceptual artist. And that's pretty much what I call myself now. I refer to myself as a born again artist because it happened pretty much overnight, you know?
When Sensation happened, I never saw it in the flesh either. I was still living in Cardiff and I'd never been to London, but I saw the images, and it was like someone had opened a door in my head that I never knew this. But yeah, it was, that's when what I was obsessed with. And even now, I think when I go around galleries sometimes, it's almost quasi-religious experience. I get so high on people's ideas.
Yeah.
Like seeing how people's imaginations work and seeing something original, I sort of get I just get so excited to see how their mind works and how it's translated into an object or whatever it is. Or it's, I remember seeing that image of Sarah Lucas, the one with the fried eggs and stuff.
Brilliant, yeah. I think it was just called Two Fried Eggs, wasn't it?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
In the chair, leant back like that.
Yeah, sort of just maybe with a fag on, maybe.
Yeah. Probably.
And I think I was about 16. I'd just never seen women behave like that. It's not like I had any female.
It's how I presume you'd always wanted to sort of react and live your own life.
Yeah, it was like permission to. I just don't think I'd really encountered many. You know, it wasn't like a particularly feminist household or anything like that. And there weren't any particularly female teachers that were talking about this kind of stuff. I just remember seeing these images and I was thinking, these women aren't behaving in you know, they're behaving like men. What's going on?
Trinians have grown up.
Yeah, it was really, it was just incredible. In a way, it was around about a similar time as when I first saw Brass Eye and Day to Day. It was a similar thing, seeing Chris Morris stuff. It was just like, I had no idea that adults behave like this. I just assumed that you get to about 18 and then that's it. You just have to stop being silly or whatever. Yeah. Because some of that, and I remember having a book when I was about, sorry, I'm jumping around. When I was about 17, I got that book called Matthew Colling's book about modern art by my bed. And I remember there were a couple of things in there that were so funny. There was like a finger, the sculpture of a finger just standing up on its own. And I remember thinking, oh my God, these artists are if I met them, we'd have the same sense of humour. And it kind of blew my mind that this art was so funny. And there was a relationship there between, yeah, like, you know, just how you make art and surreal comedy. And well, that was so
I've
exciting.
Got to say, I listened when I first got into podcasts. I like funny, you know, in whatever form. And I found Stuart Goldsmith.
Yes. Yeah. No, yeah, he's and great.
I've listened to hundreds of his podcasts. Okay. And when I listened to the comedian explaining how they devise a gag,
yeah,
it is exactly the same how I think about devising an artwork. You start off with like a feeling and then try to sort of, I would try to show that feeling in a 3D form. Whereas, and that is the punchline, is the 3D form. And
yeah, so it's like a mini journey.
It's exactly the same.
You're sort of setting out that you kind of want the audience left with this feeling, or you kind of want the audience, you want to give them that. You don't want to give them this. How much are we going to give them?
Yeah, and then exactly that. Yeah. And the parallels are amazing. The only difference is, as I say, my punchline is 3D and not funny.
I love that.
if I'm trying to make it funny.
That makes complete sense. Like, yeah, when I see, yeah, particularly with the 3D thing, when I see it, like, you go, okay, so they've probably gone through that thought process, that thought process, and this is it. And I can see the thought process, and it's amazing. Yeah.
Because the thought process of an artwork and a gag, like the gag, the thought process of a gag isn't funny. It's trying to figure out how to make it funny. And same as the thought process of an artwork isn't sort of in you know, sort of visually intense. You're trying to make it that, and the parallels are.
Yeah.
Are
do you
amazing.
Think you have the thing in art? Does this ever cross your mind though, when you're like, because sometimes I think when I'm writing comedy, there's always that thing of we go, has someone else done that though? I'm sure I've heard that. Like, okay, well, let's put a let's make it different. Let's put a twist on it. When you're making art, does any part of you go, oh, hang on, is this original? Like, has someone done this? Is this original? Is this too similar to so-and-so's, like, you know, can?
Yeah, but then that's where speaking to friends comes out, because a lot of the time, exactly what you say, you think, has someone done this before? And I met an artist online a couple of years ago. I saw her artwork and it was exactly the same as mine.
Yeah, that's scary.
Mine was made like 6 years before from my third year.
At least you were before. That's your you're right.
No, but she'd never seen me or heard of me.
Yeah.
It was the same. It was boxes. Mine was stolen items that I got people to pilfer from work. You know, a pack of post-it notes or a pen. But I'm saying that they're still a thief. And she built up this set of boxes and put images in from her past and invited people to swap the objects. Yeah, it was the same colour, the same size. It was quite amazing.
It's like that thing, isn't that Jungian thing of like universal symbols and images, and that we're all somehow tapping into this one imagination.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with anything original, but...
Unconscious influences are really interesting, because I think I feel like a lot of artists, you know, a bit like, it's a sort of really obvious shit example, but Magritte and the sheet over the head.
Yeah.
I think, didn't he find his mother's body with a sheet over the head? You know, this idea that all like writers and artists are sort of telling the same story over and over again, subconsciously. Like, it is scary how there are a couple of things from my childhood that I think I always come back to. Is like, it's like my influences haven't really changed when I was like 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the same sort of things still seem to like light up bits of my brain. And there's influences that I'm not really. I also think there's a scary thing sometimes when I think when you're writing for telly, that you realise that you've just seen so much that you know the language of telly without having to think about it, and it's almost harder to not think in TV cliches, because it's like it's so hard to write for telly and think and be in any other world, but in the world of TV you've seen. That makes any sense.
That's because it is all encompassing, isn't it? You're you've gone into that world. Everything I see is art now to me. You know, every conversation I have, I'll be thinking of an artwork, how to make that conversation 3D.
Yeah.
How to relay it as an object, you know, no matter what it is. And it does your fucking brain in sometimes, you know.
That's brilliant though. I think, like, you know, what That's a great way to see the world. I can't think of a better way than to do it like that.
Do you know Sarah Maple?
Oh, I mean, I've heard the name. I don't know her personally.
She just made an artwork in the form of a sitcom.
Oh, my God, heaven.
It's on Sky Arts. It's called Sarah Maple's Sexy Nazi Shark Show.
Do you know what that reminds me of? When was it? 2 years ago. So I went to the Biennale in Venice, the latest one, which was like dream come true. I mean, I was so excited and it was incredible. And I talk about it for another 10 minutes. But in the British pavilion, Ed Atkins? Is that his name? So he had it. I loved his room so much. It was so funny. But he had this one thing that really made me laugh. There was a lot of stuff that made me laugh. And that's a weird thing. Like me and my friend who I went with, we were like pissing ourselves laughing at some of the stuff, as in like on its side. But people were looking at us like, it's that weird thing of like, are you meant to laugh so much in our gallery? It was so joyous. But he had like fake film type. He had like a video installation, which was just film titles. As if you'd just seen a film. And then there was this weird animation happening underneath it. But I was like, that is such a great idea, just making titles. Yeah. It was just, I loved it. I loved it. It was quite cinematic.
Not enough fun in art, is there?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's weird, isn't it? Because I really want both, because I also went into rooms where I was, you know, profoundly moved and felt like, that like it was incredibly sad. Like it is sort of like I'm going there because I want a break from comedy, because sometimes it's a bit like stifling, like hey, ha, ha, everything has to be so funny, and you're a bit like, nah, sorry, life isn't actually funny. So I also really don't want comedy, but occasionally I'll see something which is so, like there was this installation called Flip and, I think they were called Flip and Flap or Flip and Flop, and it was like an imaginary double act that this artist, and I think it was Norway or Sweden, it was like all these little figures moving and they had little stories. I might have to
I went there. The one and only time I've been there was the last time it was on.
Oh, okay. So you know when you go in and there was like you went in, it was really near to where the British one was, and it was like two figures behind bars, and then there
that thing. It was all to do with prison, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there was a little booklet that told you about these characters, like a sort of haunted village of characters. I found that so funny.
Yeah.
Particularly when they started moving. What nationality was that?
I don't know, but I was thinking it was South American, but
But the other thing about that was the robot arm by the two Chinese artists. The one clearing up blood. Did you see that one?
Amazing.
I stood there for, I mean, I'm not kidding, exactly, about 4 to 5 minutes. Mesmerizing. It was absolutely stunning. And then they also, those same artists did the one which was just a foot of a statue and it had that like whipping vacuum cleaner type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Did you go into the Israeli one, which was a doctor's waiting room?
Can't remember that.
You had to get a ticket for it.
Oh, no, I didn't. We were really disorganized.
That was we were favorite. Just like,
I also think, I feel like I'm going to say her name wrong, but I think she's called Zanelle Muholi or Zanelli Muholi. And she did these incredible self-portraits that were like, I'm going to show you the picture because you'll know the image. But she was amazing.
It was the image of Black Lady.
Yeah.
Great big, a massive one. And it was up quite high.
Yeah, huge. And she's got a lot of like combs in her hair.
As soon as you said it, I had that in my mind.
I thought that was incredible. And I think I read that she was meant to be going to the Tate and then obviously the pandemic happened. But I wonder if people it feels like people have been more creative in the pandemic. That seems to be like a thing that's happened.
Well, a lot of people being at home more, having that little bit of extra time to do what they...
It's funny.
What piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, do you reckon?
Well, it's funny because to me, like, because I'm writing more, and it's kind of personal and I treat it in the same way as, you know, I see it as a form of art because I'm kind of trying to create a piece out of thoughts and feelings, but it's just it's, you know, a different medium. Because I've written about really personal stuff, that's been the most obvious, the most revealing, I guess.
Yeah.
And personal. So it's definitely that. But I think... See, the problem is I have a real, this isn't really the answer, but it's an answer. The problem I have, and I don't know what the answer is or if you know what the answer is, but like whenever I'm doing artwork, I basically at the moment still have this real asshole critical voice in my head that says, what are you doing? You already have a job. You're a really average painter. Like, why are you doing this? Like, what's this for? And I think there's so much I should be doing today. I've got to do this. I've got to do this admin. I've got to do this. Like, I just don't, because actually what made me think was that I don't have that emotional connection. Isn't all, it's blocked by the sort of asshole that's going, oh, well, start again, or, you know, do something else kind of thing. It's like, I feel like a real wannabe artist.
I was going to say, do you think that where you're doing a lot of writing, which obviously takes up a lot of your time and your creative mind, if you stop that to do artwork, do you think one part of you sees that as sort of playtime and you're playing?
Yeah.
I don't mean to sort of devalue.
Well, it is. It's also maybe because, like, this piece of writing, I've been paid to do it. We've signed a contract. You know, it's happening. It's done. But when it comes to artwork, it feels like no one's paying me to do it. Like, there's no one out there waiting for this amazing thing.
Creative procrastination. Yeah.
It's just me and, like, you know, whatever it is, a pencil or a bit of cardboard, just being like, oh, I really want to make something. And my friend said it really well the other day, who is an emerging artist. They're an illustrator, really. And he said it's about trying to take yourself seriously. It was really difficult.
Yeah. Well, I've never done that. I've always been the jokey bloke in the gang, you know.
Then, what was that like for you? Like, the point where you're okay, like, where you were like, all right, I'm actually can call myself an artist. Like, was that difficult to be like, this is what I do?
I don't know how much of my story you know, other than me being in jail and getting into art. I mean, stop me if you've heard this. I knew nothing about conceptual art.
So when you went into prison, there was no interest in art at all?
Wow. I've often said I've always been creative, but I've never really created anything. I've had the creative mind, but, you know, I've never done anything sort of physically.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, I wanted to know more about this because I properly fell in love with it overnight. And I wanted to feast on it, you know, but there was nothing that I could have. I wrote to 32 of them artists who were in that book or featured in the book, or who were even mentioned in some of the written work, hoping that I would get at least one reply. Put at the end of every letter, if it's of any consolation, my offence was neither sexual or violent, although I could have been a crazy rapist for all anyone knew, you know. And it was at a time, Katie, when I wanted to change from my life of crime. I wanted to be an artist, but no one who sounded like me from my background, I thought, was an artist. Everyone I knew,
it wasn't like an option, presented as an option.
No, I mean, it was all white middle-class men who spoke like poets, you know, and that's how I saw an artist. And there was, like you said about Sarah Lucas, who was the first artist to reply to me.
Wow, that's amazing.
These were people who were, they were a few years older than me, but they had attitude. They weren't how I saw an artist to be, you know. Sort
they
of
were anti-establishment, weren't they?
And that sort of appealed to me. And I'd read in this catalogue that a few of them had backgrounds similar to mine. Everyone I knew was a criminal. If they wasn't a criminal, they was okay with crime, you know, they'd buy yucky stuff, you know. So, and that's all I've ever known. And I wanted to get away from that. And then all of a sudden, all of these artists have wrote to me one at a time. The first was Sarah Lucas, second was Gavin Turk, and then it went on and on and on.
You still got the letter, the replies?
So, yeah, I've got all the letters, but not only did they reply to me, when I wrote back and said thank you very much, a couple of them carried on writing, pushed me towards my degree. So they pulled me away from crime, this load of artists that I didn't know. And then, like, you should contact this artist. He's at whatever gallery. His work, you'd like his work. So I'll contact this artist. And then after a while, Katie, I'd get letters from artists that I hadn't even fucking written to. And they're saying, I was with so-and-so. I was with so-and-so in the bar or in the cafe, you know, and they've mentioned you. I thought you might like my work. And they'd send me stuff as well. And I got 14 years. So I had to do seven out of that. And
so was it that tutor in particular that got you interested?
Yeah, it was fucking amazing. Yeah.
Do you think he saw something in you, like you've this spark of?
Well, that's the thing. I think the thing that got it was I was looking for something. I was a lost soul in there, yeah. You know. I didn't want to do crime and I was living with, you know, fucking million criminals. We had to do this little drawing exercise and it was shit because I didn't know how to draw. He showed me how to observe and, you know, that sort of thing. Bearing in mind, he told me about three or four different ways and the first few didn't work. Then all of a sudden, he showed me a way of doing it that clicked. And then yeah. The next exercise was find a portrait in a magazine and then draw it. And it was supposed to be a two-hour exercise. And I started drawing it. He showed me how to draw an eye. And when I'd done it, it looked like a bloody eye. But not only did it look like an eye, it looked it's like the eye I was trying to draw. You know?
It's so satisfying when something looks like the thing.
Well, I took it back to my cell and all over the weekend, I spent, I don't know, 16 hours on this bloody pencil portrait, bearing in mind I'd never done one before. And it was, do you know Stephen Burkoff, the actor?
Oh, yeah.
Stephen Burkoff, who's a very sort of demanding figure anyway. Yeah. And I've come back in and I had this artwork, this drawing on a bit of A4 paper to my chest. And Dougie, his name was, the tutor. And as I walked in the class, I went, Dougie. And then I've turned the thing around like that to show him his portrait.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me, or looked at the portrait, and then his eyes glazed over. And then I just sort of had this bit of, not acceptance, I'm sorry, I don't know enough fucking words to even say.
I know what you mean.
It was just...
But you knew you'd done something well. Yeah.
I was like a little lapdog, you know what I mean?
Validation, yeah.
Yeah. God, just seeing his face. And I just thought, well, I've just found something I'm good at, because the only thing I was good at before was crime. And, well, I was doing a fucking 14-year sentence, so I proved I was no good at that either.
Were other people around you like, did anyone else go on a similar journey of like, oh, I've discovered something that I actually...
There was a few of them in there that did. One in the art class did. He was more into music. He was doing a lot with art as well. And he served 12 years and then got found not guilty.
Fuck.
Yeah, him. Fuck. Well, his partner, his co-defendant, they both got done for these murders. And his co-defendant is now, he now does world's toughest prisons. His name's Raphael Rowe.
Okay.
He was his co-defendant.
Was it like, were you kind of keeping it private? Was like a private thing that you wanted to do this? Was there any kind of like, I'm telling it, were you like telling everyone, oh, I'm going to become
an artist? I was properly immersed into it.
Like, born again.
Yeah, I was.
It's so funny. Like it's obviously not like similar, but like my dad, he grew up like in Merthyr Tydfil, like, you know, just real rough area, and he wants to be an actor from a young age. But he was working on a building site, and he was too embarrassed to tell anyone, because I think, you know, a building site in 1970s in Merthyr Tydfil, he sort of felt like people would just take the piss out of him, and he never got over that. That thing of this is, you know, he was embarrassed by, which was a shame because he never really went for it.
Well, yeah, I was aware that it would hold me back if I didn't. And I'd tell all my sort of, I mean, I was a different person then. But
you know, there's people that you just think, if you just found this thing, you'd be fine. I just really wish other people could find this thing.
That's what I go into prisons now and I try to do just that, because it only took that little bit of wanting. And then it's just finding the key to make you change, you know. And I go into prisons now, or I go in as an artist and show them my artwork. But I say to them, like, while you're sat in your cell for 23 and a half hours, draw, paint, even just sit there thinking about something creative. Because there is so much talent in there. So much. It's frightening.
It's hard. You know, like it's horrible. I've always thought that was a really horrible term, you know, like when they say, like, they used to use that term outsider art, that was like really, it's like a horrible, really patronizing thing to say.
They've started to call it something else now.
Yeah. But oh, good.
Some people rejoice it because it means you're outside of the constraints of the art world, because you've done it off your own back. So if you haven't gone to university or art college, you are an outsider artist. But then Francis Bacon didn't go to college, you know, and there's plenty of massive artists. Jeremy Deller, I don't think, did initially.
Did he not? Yeah, it's funny. Like I went to Warwick Uni, and it was like a performance art studies degree, performance studies. But in the third year, like, we did a lot of live art, performance art, and that was my other, like, and that's what I wanted to do. I was like, I want to be Marina Abramović, because I knew I loved performing, and it's like, it was a marriage of, it was like, I love making images, yeah, but I also loved being able to emote and using my body and stuff. But I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go and do stand-up comedy. I was really, you know, black polo neck, smoking rollies, really, really like, this is what I want to do. I want to do performance art. And I've still got a couple of mates who like go around Europe performing. And, but I remember, like, I've got one mate, you know, it's quite hardcore. He does like it's almost like Franco B type, really hardcore. Like, so one of my mates is Dominic Johnson, his name is. He's really good mates with Franco B. And so I've met him a couple of times via my mate, who's also a performance artist. Yeah, like at uni, it was like people like Vito Acconci, Franco B. That whole scene was, yeah, I was really in love with it. And we performed this little performance art collective, and we sort of tried to do stuff. And looking back, it was kind of awful. But yeah, like at sort of 21, I was like, I left uni being like, oh, I'm just going to make performance art in Cardiff or something. So it's just weird how things worked out. But I can't remember why I started talking about it. But yeah, like the Franco B stuff, like, it's so weird. Like, now when I look at it as a grown up, I sort of go, oh, it's too extreme for me now. Like back then, I sort of was like, yeah, this is like real. And now I'm a bit like,
it
oh,
was
God,
a bit heavy, where'd
you get
he?
Where'd you get the energy? I mean, that was oh, what was the guy actually? Have you ever seen the printing press guy? It's because he had, I don't think it was someone else. There was a guy who, he was HIV positive, and he did a installation where he made like a cut on his back, and then lots of people were kind of making a print out of the cut with pieces of paper. And then he hung the piece of paper above the audience. And I guess it was a time where people were so fearful and there was so much misinformation. And so I think the idea was that it was somehow, he was trying to be provocative and being like, look, I'm hanging my infected blood over your heads. Like, he was trying to freak out. And the audience would leave, you know, people would leave and stuff. I wish I could remember what that guy's name. I mean, at the time, I'm sure I would have had an answer, but now I definitely don't even have the language to sort of decipher what's good from. I remember a really bad thing that me and my, like when I was about 20, me and my friend, we devised this performance piece. And looking back, it was so ridiculous. Maybe she borrowed a video camera from her dad. And the idea was we'd go up to people in the street and film them and just say like, how do you feel about the fact you're going to die? Can you imagine that? Like, you're walking down the street, mind your own business. Some little brat asks you that and shoves a video. And at the time, we were like, yeah, 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 this is really amazing. We're just going to go up to people and say, you're going to die.
But in the moment, it was working, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the moment, it was like...
it was important at the moment.
Yeah, we thought it was incredible.
How about if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? Funny enough, do you know David Hoyle? He's a performance artist, but it's kind of a bit like cabaret, like avant-garde cabaret or whatever.
No, I don't think
and he occasionally, I think he's so funny. He does stuff in Manchester, Vauxhall Tavern, he was doing stuff. But anyway, he's brilliant. And I think he did a sort of thing in the Tate where he sort of sang. Anyway, so I'd if I'm allowed, even though he's flesh, I'd have him in there because he's amazing. I'm trying to think, it would be a real mix of when I like nostalgia and then what I like now, because so when I was a teenager, I was like obviously obsessed with anything, all the surrealism stuff. That was like a big thing I was into. I've always loved Paula Rego.
Nice.
She'd be in there. And I've always loved Emin, actually. Have you ever read her, is it called Shadowlands, the autobiography?
I haven't.
Got it just over there. I'll send it to you if you want. It's amazing. It's quite a hard read. It's like heartbreaking, but it's brilliant. Yeah, I think she's amazing. So yeah, I have Emin, I've had David Hoyle. I might even have Hockney, you know. I know it's quite traditional, but I do think they're amazing. Especially, like, you know, the stuff he's done recently, like those crazy landscapes. Yeah, I love all that. Paul Rego, I've always loved.
Talking of miniatures, sorry to butt in again. I do this a lot. Paul Rego, her son-in-law. Do you know Ron Muick?
Yes. I'd have him. I love his stuff. When I saw that exhibition in Edinburgh, and it was so moving. Anish Kapoor, I've always loved.
Yeah.
Maggie Hamling, I've always loved. I've half listened to that one that you've done. It's incredible. In fact, weirdly, she was in the audience of a David Hall performance once. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, she's so scary. Oh, no, I could tell that she liked you, because I feel like you sort of were disarming and put her at ease. And I'll have her as my last one, actually. Also, I imagine as a woman artist, especially when she was dying out, it's probably good to be, you had to be forceful, probably.
Yeah. Well, she was in the company of a lot of very strong characters, like Francis Bacon. You know, she was pals with him, and he was quite an overpowering character.
Yeah, he was troubled, wasn't he? Have you seen that great documentary about him? There's someone quite well known interviewing him, isn't there? There's that one, which was...
There's a good one with Melvin Bragg.
Yes, that's the one I think I mean.
He's pissed quite a lot, and he's knocking drinks over and stuff like that.
Yeah, that one. He's quite old, and they're sat at the table quite a lot talking. That was quite sad in a way, wasn't it?
Yeah. If you wasn't within the arts, what is it you think you'd like to do?
That's tricky, because it's like, if I wasn't doing what I am now, it would be like, you know, any alternative would just be another art form. Oh, well, I would do this. You know, like when I was little, when I was a teenager, I was like, I wanted to be a fashion designer for ages. And also my mum was, she used to do the sort of admin for this sort of dance company. They were like contemporary dance companies. So some of my earliest memories were watching like dancers rehearse, and I used to be like, oh, that's what I want to do. But that's the question. What would I do? I think I can't even think of a job that isn't in the arts. is that really sad?
No.
I'd be a librarian. Excellent. Is that in the arts?
That's a good enough answer.
It's still in the arts. No, there must be. I mean, what would I do?
It's facilitating. It's a job that facilitates the arts, isn't it?
I'm trying to challenge myself to some. I mean, is gardening the arts? I could be. I do some gardening.
It shows how much of an arty person you are.
I can't.
Everything to mechanics, are they artists?
Yeah. Pilot? Is that?
Oh, Katie.
There's someone at the door. Hang on. Yeah. Wait there a sec. Sorry, they knocked and then they actually just left it there anyway, so I didn't need to be there.
It's going
to
be a bit of knockdown ginger. How can anyone see your artwork, Katie, be it online or social
media? Well, I might need to do some more, is the answer. Well, on Instagram, really. I might set up a website if you've put a few bits on there. But at the moment, it's just my Instagram, I'd say, which is really Katie Wicks. I think that's my name on there. My book's coming out which is a sort of collection of stories, is coming out on April the 15th.
It's my birthday.
Oh, really? That's a good sign. Sorry, I don't mean to plug, but I thought I'd just mention it anyway. Yeah, and it's a series of sort of stories, like little mini essay, but kind of lots of, like, you know, just personal writing about things that have happened to me. A lot to do with kind of going through loss. And things like that. It's called Delicacy. And that's kind of it, really. That's me.
Well, Katie, that's all my questions asked. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Sorry to have rabbited on too much. I'm famous.
No, it's really refreshing. It's so nice to talk about this stuff, which is genuinely really interesting. That's one of my, I don't know if you can see it, that's one of my dad's paintings, that one there. The
big one.
Yeah, the big one.
Are you pointing at the screen?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, that was so stupid of me. That was. That's one of my grandfather's.
Yeah.
That's one of my dad's wintry landscapes.
Nice.
Which is great. Anyway, and it's a great colour wall. You got to admit. Great to chat. And I hope our paths will cross again.
Oh, loved it.
Nice to chat with you. Have a good evening.
There you go, Katie Wicks. How much fun was that? And just before I forget, Katie mentioned there about her new book. Well, it's a memoir called Delicacy. And it's available to pre-order on Amazon and, the internet. But yeah, Katie's visual art journey is quite a fascinating one. And if you go over to her Instagram page, which is really_KatieWicks, you'll see just how much of a pull she's got into the visual art world. In this episode, we also mention the Royal Academy. And the Royal Academy is a link to next week's guest. He's a world-renowned art historian, writer and curator, whose four-month exhibition at the Royal Academy, Francis Bacon, Man and Beast, should have opened in January 2021, but because of lockdowns, the Royal Academy have postponed it until next year. And there isn't a person better informed about the work and life of Francis Bacon than next week's guest, Michael Pepiat, because as well as being Francis Bacon's friend, he was also his biographer. And it was another one I was oh so intimidated to press record. But anyway, that's all next week. Like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. If you've got any queries, drop us a line on social media at ministryofarts.org. If you're enjoying these episodes, spread the word of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're not, well, fuck you. You won't be listening to this bit anyway. And those of you that are, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.